This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Very, very good friend, the executive producer, NFL Films, joining us on the River Islands guest line. It is Greg Cosell. Hey, Greg, what's going on this week?
Mark, what's happening? How you doing, buddy?
We are fantastic, and you should know, you probably already do, this fan base, for the better part of 6 weeks, is all turned up about Brandon Ayuk. So, he got like 10 to 12 targets. You know, some were called back by penalties.
Right.
I think what people are interested, though, in is he actually playing well? Like, how's his route running and openness look to you?
You know, I think he looks okay. I mean, you know, the guy didn't play for a long time, and now, you know, he's trying to get back in the groove, and I think that takes time. You know, so we'll see. I mean, look, the guy's been in the league now for a number of years. He's been a good receiver. He didn't lose all of his ability. So it's just a matter of taking time and getting back into it, and I think that'll happen. You know, so, you know, that's one of those speculation questions, because there's no way to know the answer to that question. You know, we're not there every day. Like I said, I did a deep dive on him last summer where I watched every one of his targets, and he's a quality NFL receiver. I wouldn't put him in the top probably 5 or 6. You know, I'm sure he wanted to be paid the same way Jefferson is, but, you know, that didn't happen. But he's a really good receiver, and it'll happen. I mean, you know, it takes time.
Yeah, and time is, it's not running out, but you'd love that
time.
No,
it's not running out.
You'd love that time to come on Sunday, not only for him individually, but for the team as well. When you look at the film and you see 12 targets for Juwan and 10 for Brandon, did the Rams pay more attention to Brandon? Because I haven't seen the All-22, but it seems like on a lot of his routes where he didn't get the ball, they had coverage over the top on him.
Well, I mean, the Rams play a lot of too high shell coverage, so there's always going to look like there's a safety over the top. That's just built into a too high coverage. So that's not specific to what Brandon Ayuk is. That's the way they play coverage. You know, that's foundationally how they play. They're more of a too high coverage team than they are of a single high safety team. So they'll always look like there's someone over the top. So they didn't do that just for Brandon Ayuk. I mean, I know a lot of people said that on the first touchdown to Jennings, which I think was the that was the 13-yarder, I believe.
Yes.
That was the first touchdown
correct.
That ended. Yeah. I mean, the play design was to Ayuk. But Durant did a great job with physical press disrupting his release, because it was a slant route. And a slant route is a pure timing route. And they did it off toss action to the other side of the field, to the boundary. Ayuk had a plus split to the field. So Purdy looked there because that was the design of the play. So that moved the safety over there. And so I'm sure a lot of people who saw that probably thought, oh, well, the safety's cheating toward Ayuk. No, he wasn't. He was reacting to Brock Purdy. And actually, the toss run action really impacted the second level defenders. And that's why Jennings was wide open. But that had nothing to do with the fact that the Rams came out of the huddle and said, let's focus on Ayuk. It's the way it played out, because Purdy looked there. That was the design of the play.
Greg, I guess how much would you say that was the case with Jennings' entire day? Like, how much of it was the plan versus things ended up that way based on the defense?
It's probably a combination of both because, you know, that's another one of those questions, just being honest, because we don't know what the approach was during the week. I mean, obviously, they're a team that works in the middle of the field. That's where, you know, they run their routes. And Jennings works very well in the middle of the field.
Yeah, and he was terrific in the middle of the field. And the throw that Purdy made for the second touchdown, just the lob throw where Jennings was able to break free. What did you see on
that play? You're talking about the 34-yarder on second and 15?
Right, when he was just, you know, really all alone down the left sideline. Looked like the design of that play was brilliant.
Yeah, now that play came off conventional play action. By conventional play action, what I mean is Purdy is under center, not in the gun, which they don't do as much as they used to, although they did it a decent amount in this game. Bell motioned across the formation. Jennings had what we call a reduced split, meaning he was closer to the tackle and to the formation. He wasn't split out wide. So he had a reduced split. He ran what's essentially an inside skinny. And the Rams were in a two-shell coverage, just like I said, and that means the middle is open. This was Purdy at his absolute best. It was great timing by Purdy, hitting his back foot, transferring his weight, delivering, putting the ball right on Jennings' hands. A really, really good play design against what was, I'm sure, an anticipated two-shell zone coverage. That's why it was a reduced split by Jennings, so that when he ran what was, like I said, essentially a skinny post or a bang eight, he was working more like a seam route, whereas if he had run that from out wide, he wouldn't have been working in the open middle, which you get an open middle when there's two high safeties. So that was just a beautifully designed play and great, great execution by both Jennings and particularly by Purdy.
Greg Cosell with us on Willard and Dibbs every single Wednesday here in 95.7 The Game. Greg, it was the first time that we got to get a look at Talanoa Hufanga since his injury. How did he look on tape?
Yeah, I mean, he's a very physical downhill player. He plays on the back end as well, you know, but he's a certain kind of player. He's a kind of a tempo setter when he's at his best, because he comes downhill with velocity, with speed. He's a hitter. So, yeah, he'll continue to get more and more snaps. He'll be the starter with Brown, you know, he'll play both on the back end. I mean, Brown and Hufanga are basically interchangeable safeties. They can both play on the back end, and they can both play in the box. They can be overhang players just outside the formation. So that gives them a lot of versatility on the back end with their safeties.
How concerned should we be by the tape that was put out there by the cornerbacks? Isaac Yiadom gave up a 48-yard PI, and Mooney Ward gave up the big 50-yard bomb to Tutu Atwell. Where were the breakdowns on those plays?
Well, it's funny you say that, because the 50-yarder to Atwell was actually the exact same concept as the 32-yarder to Robinson earlier in the fourth quarter, you know, without going into the weeds and breaking down the whole play because people can't see it, but it was the exact same concept by the Rams. But Ward's a good player. See, the thing you always have to be careful of is it's the NFL. Guys are going to get beat, corners in particular. So that doesn't mean they're bad players. What happened was is Atwell motioned across the formation on the 50-yarder, so he had free access into his route, and Ward was playing with outside leverage, and Atwell is fast. I think he's a sub 440 guy, so he just got on top of Ward, who may not, I don't know what's in his head, but my guess is he may not have been expecting that route. So, you know, he just got behind him, and Stafford made a great throw. But Ward's a good player. You know, the question is really on the other side, because Yiadom is a guy that's been with a lot of teams. You know, you can line him up, there's no question. He can play in the league. But, you know, I think that's one reason why they drafted Green, who got some time, obviously had the holding penalty in the end zone. But we'll see if, as time goes on, if Green is able to win that job, because Green is a physical, competitive, feisty kind of corner who played a ton of press man in college at Florida State. But for now, he may not be ready, so they're going with the veteran Yiadom, who's, like I said, he's played a lot of snaps in this league.
Greg, there's a lot of angst out here about Devondre Campbell. Part of that is just because he for the moment is replacing who we've come to know as a phenomenal player in Dre Greenlaw. But we talked about him last week, and you seem to sort of ring the bell of like, this is a good player, give it time. And he struggled again, particularly with the pass interference there in the fourth quarter. What are you seeing from him right now, specifically in the pass game?
Well, here, let me ask you this. This is not true, by the way, but what if I said he played a great game except for two plays? Would you say, oh, man, well, you know, because he had pass interference, that means he had a lousy game? You know, I think you always have to be careful about one or two plays in a game defining a game and a player. And again, I'm not studying him in great detail on every single play. He's not as good a player as Greenlaw, who I think is a really good player. I remember watching Greenlaw coming out of college, and I believe it was Arkansas, and I really liked him, and a lot of people said he was too small. And I thought, no, this guy plays really, really physically and competitively. So Greenlaw's a better player than Campbell. Campbell's closer to the end of his career. Campbell's always been a good linebacker with a lot of length, because 6'4 is a trait, but you know, he's just not as good a player as Greenlaw. But you can't just look at the one play and then say, well, that means he's not a good player. There's a lot of plays in games, and don't forget, there's a lot of plays where guys don't play well, and it doesn't impact the overall play, but you don't know the guy didn't play well on that play. You know, so that just happened to really impact the game, and he got beat on that, and he committed a pass interference, and because of the nature of the game, you know, it turned out to be one of those plays that we magnify and probably spend too much time focusing on.
That's a fair defense of the defense on the play, but I have a question for you about the scheme, Greg, because I'm seeing a blitz rate of 14.1% for the Niners, second lowest in football.
And, yep.
You know, by my amateur eye, a pretty milquetoast or vanilla defensive approach. What have you seen through three games as far as the exotic or plain nature of this defense?
Well, I think the thought was, and it might have to change with Hargrave now, I think the thought was that they have a really good pass rush D-line. And if you feel you can rush the quarterback with four and impact the quarterback, then you want to rush with four because that gives you seven in coverage. That's the way a lot of coaches think. Now, not every coach does, but now you're getting into a philosophy, and there's no right or wrong about philosophy. Philosophy is often based on your personnel. And I'm sure they thought that they could create meaningful pressure on quarterbacks in those critical high leverage situations, third downs, important plays in games. But now with Hargrave gone, and I assume for the year, they may have to reassess that. And we'll see if they do or they don't. But I would imagine that that's a conversation they're having this week, because Hargrave's a very, very good inside pass rusher. He was a really strong bull rusher who drove offensive guards and centers back into the pocket. They don't have that guy now. So now we'll see if they feel that they have to turn up the heat and create some more pressure with blitz concepts. So now we'll wait and see. But the mere fact that they have a low rate of blitz does not automatically mean it's wrong.
Greg, you've always, with your look at the film, you've always, I felt, been impressed by Brock Purdy. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah. It's impossible not to be impressed by Purdy because he knows how to play the quarterback position.
And I, like, the reason I want to go back to him is because this particular game, you had a lot of talk out there about, well, now Brock, without a lot of his weapons, what's this going to look like? And it looked pretty darn good, at least
sure
to the naked eye. I'd love to go on a little bit of a deeper dive in terms of what you saw and what you think it means for his abilities at that position.
Well, the way I'd answer that is, I don't think there was any difference in Brock Purdy. I think he plays the same way all the time. I think Brock Purdy is a quarterback that understands exactly what he's seeing pre-snap to post-snap. He's asked in this offense, and this is Kyle's offense, to make a lot of difficult throws between the numbers. It requires absolutely precise timing, absolutely precise ball location. This is who he is. This is how he plays. He plays the same way every week. Numbers become numbers. That's dependent on a given game, how a defense plays you. You know, there's all. Look, if Bell doesn't drop that ball, he has better numbers. You know, games play out certain ways. But Brock Purdy, and I think this is one of the most impressive things about him, is he plays the same way all the time. You don't have to worry about what you're getting when you line up with Purdy. And like I said, I think the first time we spoke when I started with you guys is he's so good at recognizing defense from pre-snap to post-snap. He just has a really innate, natural feel for anticipation throws like that Jennings 34-yard touchdown. He's just a really good quarterback. It's because he's not physically imposing and he doesn't have a gun. You know, when I hear people say things like, well, this is a game where we have to find out about Brock Purdy, I don't really understand that. I think, you know, given that I've watched every snap of his, and I actually watched 3 years of his college tape, and I'll be the first to admit, I did not love him coming out, because a lot of the traits he's shown in the NFL did not show up on his college tape, because that's not the way the college game is played. But there's no problem with Brock Purdy, and we don't need to decide each week whether, oh, this is the game we find out about Brock Purdy. I mean, you could almost argue he really hasn't had a game where you went, oh my God, this is a really bad game. Has he had bad throws? Sure, every quarterback in the league has bad throws, but Purdy has not had a stinker of a game.
Do you remember Christmas last year, and does that qualify? Four picks against Baltimore?
I remember one of them against Hamilton was a really bad read.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was a really, really bad read. Weren't a couple of them tips?
Yeah, two of them, actually.
Yes, there were.
Two of them were.
I remember the first half. I'll tell you what, now I do remember that game. In the first half of that game, the 49ers marched up and down the field.
Yep, that's true.
And yep, and then the game got away from them for various reasons. So, no, I didn't. I can't remember in detail every play from that game. It was a while ago.
Sure.
But I do remember they marched up and down the field in the first half. But like I said, he made a really bad read on the Hamilton interception. And you know what? That's going to happen. He's going to make, you know, he could come out this week and make a bad read. That's going to happen. But, you know, I don't think, like I said, I think we're past the point of deciding whether Brock Purdy is a really good quarterback.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because my partner and I are constantly telling callers that very thing. I want to go back to the Ronnie Bell play for a couple reasons. One, to just tip the cap to the masterclass of a play call, because it was well designed and the route was well run, but Ronnie Bell couldn't make the catch, and it had me thinking about the Niners roster overall. And I'm wondering, Greg, if we overrate the roster top to bottom when we say that this roster is the best in football.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
Oh, well, I mean, best in football, that's a superlative. I don't know if, I'd have to think about everybody's roster. I mean, look, I don't know if I'd say that about the 49ers roster. You know, I think that when everyone's healthy, and I think there's now a serious question as to whether McCaffrey even plays this season, and again, I'm not a doctor, but, you know, just the news is not necessarily great. No, I don't know if I'd say that overall they have the best roster in football. I think they have a very good roster, and I think at key positions they have players who can impact games. But if you're talking about an overall roster, again, that's hard for me to answer because I'm not looking at every team's roster right now. But, you know, I think that there are probably some areas where you'd say that they have players you kind of get by with, but you'd love to be better at those positions.
Greg Cosell with us, the executive producer of NFL Films, dives into the tape like no other with us here, Wither and Dibs, 95.7 The Game, every single Wednesday. Okay, Greg, let's look ahead. The New England Patriots are coming off of a Thursday night, at least offensively, a total stinker. So what do they sort of offer offensively that could potentially challenge the 49er defense in its current state?
Well, they can only play one way offensively and be effective. They can only be a running first football team and then have the hope that Jacoby Brissett can make some plays here and there. That's the only way they can play and be effective. You know, I think it was week one when they ran for whatever it was. Stevenson had the great game. They won week one. So they have to be a running football team and a defensive football team. And on defense, they do have some good players, and they're not an easy defense to play against. But as far as offensively, there's only one way they can really play. Now, having said that, it is the NFL. Jacoby Brissett's played in the league a long time. Can he make a play? Of course he can. But overall, they're not going to come out and ask Brissett to throw the ball 40 times by choice. That's not going to happen. Now, if the Niners are able to go ahead 24-3, you know, then obviously the whole game changes. But the Patriots can only play one way and be effective, and they can only play in a certain kind of game if they hope to have a chance to win.
Yeah, they're going to have
And lots of crazy things happen, like fumbles, punt,
right.
Those things you can't predict.
Yeah, they're a team that needs to front run without an explosive offense, and their defense is one that could potentially keep them in the game. Where's their strength defensively? Is it primarily against the run?
Yeah, I don't know, you know, who's injured and who's not, but I can tell you that they've got players on their defensive front that are really difficult. They've got Dietrich Wise, who's been in the league for a while, number 91. He plays D-tackle and DN, really good player, very overlooked, you know, from a media perspective. They've got Keon White, the second-year player from Georgia Tech, number 99, another guy that can play inside and outside. He's becoming a dominant force. They've got Gotcha, who's a really nice player on the inside. They've got Jelani Tavai, who's a really good multi-dimensional linebacker. You know, they've got a secondary. They've got Christian Gonzalez, the second-year corner, who missed most of his rookie season. You guys, I'm sure, know him from what was once the Pac-12. Really good player. Has length, speed, really good corner. Kyle Duggar is another multi-dimensional player. Peppers. They've got a lot of these multi-dimensional players that can line up in different spots depending on their defensive calls. So defensively, it's a challenge.
I don't know if the Niners are going to see him on Sunday. He got in at the very end on Thursday. What was your thought on Drake May coming out of college?
I thought he was the toolsiest of all the quarterbacks coming out of college. You know, he's 6'4", 225. I actually stood next to him at the combine on the floor of the dome, and he's a big freaking dude. So I really liked Drake May. I know some of the coaching staff down in North Carolina, and I was told in no uncertain terms that there is no bust factor with Drake May, that the kind of kid that he is, the way he works, the way people gravitate toward him. Now, again, if he does get to play, you know, he's a rookie quarterback. I mean, look what's happened, you know, with Caleb Williams. Look what's happened with Bo Nix. You know, Jaden Daniels has played very, very well, but when you watch the tape, you understand why and how they're treating him. You know, rookie quarterbacks, for the most part, there's always an exception. Certainly C.J. Stroud was an exception a year ago, but for the most part, rookie quarterbacks have a lot of ups and downs. So I imagine if he gets into games early, particularly since he's aggressive in the way in which he plays, that he'll make some mistakes because he'll see things that he hasn't seen before and that he won't recognize.
That was incredible. You gave us toolsiest and big frickin' dude. Now
I like that.
That's some scouting now,
dude.
Greg.
That is a trait. You know, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, because quarterbacks have gotten shorter. They've gotten shorter and more athletic. So now we accept, you know, as part of the equation, that a quarterback could be 6 feet, a half inch, and still be a really good NFL quarterback. Whereas back in the day, as you guys remember, you know, if a guy wasn't 6'3 or 6'4, people didn't even really consider him to be an NFL quarterback. So May looks like one of those old school guys.
Greg, we love it. We look forward to next week, starting right now.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much.
All right, there he goes. Greg Cosell.